I'm Justin.
I'm Teresa.
And this is True Country.
With us on the show today, we have Kyle Stallins. Country singer, songwriter, and accomplished pianist, Kyle began his musical journey at the age of 4 when his mother, a trained vocalist, began teaching him piano and voice. The Aledo, Texas native took piano lessons and sang in his church growing up. In September of 2008, Stallins moved to Nashville, where he began to play gigs on Broadway. From there, he made connections that led him to perform with John Michael Montgomery for nearly two years. Following that, he played with several artists, including Chuck Wicks and Walker Hayes, and opened for big headliners, including Brad Paisley, Toby Keith, Vince Gill, and Josh Turner, among others. In 2013, Stallins was offered an opportunity to play keyboards, guitar, and sing background vocals for Kelly Pickler. Throughout that time, his resume grew to include performances with various artists on the Grand Ole Opry, the historic Ryman Auditorium, as well as major TV shows such as The View, Ellen, and the ACA Awards. He worked with Pickler until 2017 and shortly after started his pursuit of a solo career. Stallins also traveled all over the world and was part of numerous USO tours. This is going to be a great interview. Kyle Stallins, welcome to True Country.
Hey, it's great to be here.
You got a long bio, my friend.
Man, I tell you what, it's, you could fit it all. Man, all the stories I've got, we need about an hour and a half.
Well, let's dig into some of those. But before
we'll
we do,
we'll abbreviate it a little bit.
Yeah, before we do, we always like to start off with a random icebreaker question. So I'm going to ask you, aside from country music, you're playing on the piano, what's your favorite song to play?
Favorite song to play besides country music?
Mm-hmm.
On the piano, I would say right now, it's Christmas Time Is Here.
Nice.
It's good.
Appropriate.
The old, Charlie Brown Christmas song.
There we go.
Our kids have been listening to that.
It ebbs and flows.
Yep.
All right. Well, tell us a little bit about how you did get started. I said a little bit in your bio, but let us know how you got started and then if you had a specific goal or intent when you did start.
Yeah, I got started, well, really when I was in about 15 or 16, I was playing at church one night after the service. Me and my brother jumped up on the piano, and he's a fiddle player, and so I think we were playing Milk Cow Blues or something, and one of the members of a church, one of the new members, his name was Dan Roberts, and he came up and said, "Well, hey, you guys sound pretty good." He goes, I'm a country singer and just moved back to the area, and I've been looking for a piano player." And so I was like, "Well, that sounds fun, you know." And I mean, he goes, I'll send you some music, and why don't I have you come over to the house, and we'll sit down and just talk country music for a while. And I always tell people that was my country music college. That was my country music education.
Nice.
So then we got hooked up and went over there, and I played for him, and we'd listen to some, we listened to George Strait, we listened to Merle Haggard and everybody. And that was it. That was where country music started for me. And then that was, you know, that carried me as I got to know Dan better. That's what really kind of opened my eyes to the possibility of moving to Nashville and having a career.
Nice.
So when you graduated from high school, was there any thought, I'm going to go to college, or did you go to school, or was it, I'm just going to move to Nashville, I'm going to be a professional musician?
Yeah, I definitely was of the school of thought that if I'm going to go do a career in music, I need to go get education. So I auditioned for the College of Music at North Texas. And at that time, you know, everything was based around classical music. So I had to get in on a classical audition. There was no commercial music program. There was two options. It was classical or jazz. So I did both. I did classical growing up. And so I said, if I'm going to go to this college, I better get on it. So I dug in real hard with a really fantastic piano player from Hudson Oaks. His name is David Carraway. He actually passed away probably 5 or 6 years, probably more than that. He was fantastic. He prepped me for college, and it was like, no joke. Here's where you get to go, and here's where you're at now. So ready, go. That's what I did. I was at piano lessons before I went to school, like 7 a.m. So
yeah,
jeez,
man,
yeah.
Nice.
So then you move out to Nashville. You're ready to rock and roll in country music. What was your strategy when you got out there? Did you know any people out there at that time?
I knew about 5 people.
It's better than nothing.
That's right. I mean, it's better than nothing. There's a guy from my high school that was out there, and he was a singer-songwriter. And then I had one of my buddies from college from North Texas. We were both in the jazz program, and he moved out there. Other than that, I mean, there was a couple of people. And one kid I grew up with named Chad Harris, he was there. And all of those people came into my life in a huge way at some point. But the thing is, we're all up there just trying to figure out this crazy game and this crazy world. So, I had a handful of, you know, people. We weren't, I mean, at that time, gosh, I still had a flip phone. that was 2008. Uh-huh. I can't remember when I got an iPhone. we had one goal to start. Our goal was to get an artist gig. That's what we call it. Okay. I want an artist gig. What that meant was I want to play in an art in a country music artist band.
Mm-hmm.
So we went downtown. We walked the streets. I usually did that from Monday to Wednesday. Thursday, Friday, Saturday was just insane. So I usually stayed away. But I would go to any bar that had a keyboard player. I'd introduce myself. I'd ask him if I'd get up and play and get up and jam 2 or 3 songs and make, you know, get all by his business cards, hand mine out, and then I'd go to the next bar. So we did that usually from, I would tell people, it would usually be from 6 to 10, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And that's kind of your networking days and your audition days. Every day is an audition.
Mm-hmm.
Now, your first contacts that you met that actually bared fruit, who would that have been? And what was that gig that you got out of it?
I don't even remember who called me. It was one of those things where it was like 4:30. I got a text message saying, can you play at 6? Which is completely logical in Nashville. that's early on time. It's usually 4, you know, it's 5:55. Hey, can you play at 6? So it's like, good Lord. I just remember like I was getting groceries out of my car or something. And I was like, okay, great. This is it. My first Broadway gig. Boom. So jumped in the truck and got down there and played in a band. I had no idea who anybody was. It just was like, get up, plug in, play. First song is going to be, you know, Dust on the Bottle. Okay, great. Here we go. So,
jeez.
Anyways, met a bass player. His name was Cliff Hagan. Cliff Hagan played for Darren Warren from Kentucky. Darren Warren's sound man was Kirk Willie, who was also the sound man for John Michael. And that's how it worked.
Goodness.
Always some connection.
But I know that's
right?
that's about a 3-second family tree, but it took about 6 months from the time of that till my first gig with John Michael.
So. Okay.
Were you working out there doing anything to help supplement the income while you were playing?
Yeah, first job was boot salesman.
Yeah, like Garth. There you go.
That's exactly right. I started selling boots and did that for, oh gosh, I probably did that for 6-7 months. Then I went on the road and I went straight music there for 3 or 4 months. Took a job out. We went out, good Lord. My first gig outside of Nashville was all the way to Elko, Nevada.
Wow.
Jeez.
Oh gosh. Which I don't recommend with a truck, with a van and a trailer with
no
brakes.
Oh my goodness.
The trailer didn't have any brakes. And if you're ever out there in the winter, it's not the safest.
Oh my gosh.
So I survived. I told my parents, hey, I'm going to go on a gig and we're going to, you know, Nevada. It's probably just like, what?
Now, when you're a musician with an artist like that, do they put you on retainer? Or are you on salary? Or are you just getting paid per gig? How does that work?
Yeah, it's usually a show pay. That's what it is. Mostly everything in Nashville is a show pay, unless you know, for some reason get on, you know, real kind of the inner circle and you become maybe like production manager or tour manager. Generally everything's based on show pay, and you want that sweet balance of a high show pay and a lot of shows. You can have no shows and high show pay, or you can have a ton of shows and low show pay. That's definitely not where you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
As a piano player in the business, you have the, I guess, the luxury of being on the big
big shows that can afford a keyboard player. Mm-hmm. And then not, then there's nothing else for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A blessing and a curse on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You kind of, it's kind of, you kind of, you know, you're the icing on the cake, but there's not a lot of icing. There's not a lot of cakes to go around.
I like that analogy.
Yeah. Right. You gotta have a lot. Yeah. So. but that was, but, you know, I was green and, I was green and I didn't care. It could have paid me $20 a show. I'd have done it. So, mm-hmm. I really did not care. And, you know, the lessons I learned on that first tour were just immensely, applicable the rest of my career. I still know those guys to this day. Every time I go to Nashville, if I run into them, I've been, it's just it's a bond, you know, mm-hmm. you're family. As soon as you hit a tour bus, you're immediately family. And, mm-hmm. You'll never be the same after you are on a tour with any group of guys and girls and tour managers and bus drivers. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's just everybody sharing their knowledge of what they know, where they've been, where they come from. And that's the real connection. That's what keeps you going. Mm-hmm. You know, that's absolutely. Great. So it keeps you going.
That's great. Well, we ask all of our guests about their highest and low moments in the business. And so let's start out with the low point. Is there a low point that you had in your journey so far?
Absolutely.
Don't be too excited to answer that question.
Oh, I am. You know, I am, because I know where I've been and I know where I'm at now. And if it wasn't for those low points, these high points would not carry as much weight. And, yep. Man, yeah, I got married young, and we had a marriage, and it did not survive the Nashville life. It totally didn't. Mm. So there was a point where I was actually living the country music, which was, you know, your wife left, your dog left, you get thrown out of the house.
Oh gosh.
So that was that's a part of my story, and you know it was hilarious now, because I actually got let go. From the John Michael gig and the Chuck Wicks gig, all about the same time, all that was happening. So that was clearly the low point.
Mm.
Yeah.
I started over. Yeah. I started over probably. I mean, it was my life. There was my beginning, and then there was my second beginning, which was that. I started working at, I think I was working at Ross in Hendersonville. And then I was playing on Broadway and. Right. I was doing everything I was normally doing. I was just started over. Mm-hmm. You know? So yeah, clean slate, start over.
So mm-hmm. Let's go into the high point then. So we're in the low. What was the highest point so far in your journey?
Yeah, the highest point. Well, I mean, as soon as I got the text message for the audition for Kristen Kelly, I mean, that was where everything changed. I got an audition opportunity with Kristen Kelly. She was a Texas artist. And she had a really big hit song called Ex Old Man that came out, which was about divorce. So I was like, great, perfect. This is a great
gig for me. I know so about that, I guess.
the cool thing was like, oh, hey, it's an audition. And if you get it, then you guys leave on the Brad Paisley tour in like 2 months.
Wow.
So I was like, yeah. And at the time, my brother was living with me. And I said, you're auditioning too. And you're going to audition on bass. And he was like, I don't want to. And I was like, you're doing it. So. Anyways, he auditioned on bass. He got the gig. I got the gig, and we headed on the Brad Paisley tour 2012.
Awesome.
Sweet. So what was the biggest crowd y'all played in front of on that tour?
On that tour, probably 40,000.
Nice.
So how was that going from Broadway or for some smaller shows, maybe 1,000 or so people, to going in front of 40,000? What was that like?
It was just pure freaking power. You're just like, you know, you just feel like, the people out here they're just losing their minds, especially for our opening stuff at the parking lot. It was like, that was the appetizer. And then when we were done working, we got to go watch the big show.
Yeah.
And the big show was in the, you know, the auditorium or the arena or whatever. And this was an amphitheater tour. So people were just loving it. And, to just watch the level of professionalism of a big tour like that, you don't really get to see that a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
That's so rare. And I was so blessed to have that at a really young part of my career, as we all were. And I was on there with, I was on there with Janet Kramer was on the tour, mm-hmm. Love and Theft and Kristen Kelly.
Okay.
And then Scotty McCreery, the band Perry, and then Brad Paisley.
Hmm.
Nice.
And just, I mean, I learned so much in that tour. I mean,
we learned so much from the players, from the techs, from the artists, from the fans. Mm-hmm. That's where you really learn what it means to have a hit song. It's fine if you play a hit song in a bar. It's another thing to see that hit song played by the artist with 40,000 people. Mm-hmm. At the time, it's a hit song. There's just all the stars align, and then there's nothing like it. You're going, this is why we do it. So
yeah, that's fantastic. Well, you've touched on it a little bit. You gained a lot of knowledge from the tours and then certainly from your experiences, highs and lows. With all the knowledge that you have now, is there anything that you'd do differently if you were just starting out in the industry?
I just would have poured myself into more relationships, asked more questions, set up more meetings and coffees. And I don't think I would have gone out as much. I think I just would have spent more time with people hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really, really tempting to lone wolf it when you move to a town like that, because, you know, you got your set of talent and you want that to be what carries you, and you want yourself to be what puts you on the top. But it's just not that way. It's a, mm-hmm. it's a team effort.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really difficult to understand that at a young age when you're just coming out of college and you're on fire and you just ready to take over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And also mastering the art of, you know, networking. I mean, it's, you know, let's face it, it's competitive. So mm-hmm. how do you navigate that with a bunch of other people that are competitive? And it really just comes down to relationships and having your walls down and being vulnerable, you know,
mm-hmm.
being, letting people see you. And, you know, you get to be completely okay with rejection every day. and I absolutely was not.
Yeah. Yeah. Gain a little humility.
You don't take it personally after a while. It's just business, right? Just keep going.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
That's great. Well, tell us what you're doing today.
Today, well, I moved back to Texas last September.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing personal training for a while. Then I was writing songs and still doing studio work and all that. And I'm actually doing the musical directing for the high school here, local high school, doing a Broadway musical. So I'll be doing some Broadway music this year.
That's fun.
I'll be doing some wedding music. I'll be going back into the studio this year doing, I think I'm going to do acoustic album and kind of have like a little bit low key acoustic thing, but with some really good, you know, kind of bluegrass roots, kind of rootsy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I'm in Texas, I get to kind of shift my styles and kind of jump on the Texas style bandwagon for a little bit. And,
cool.
Just enjoy a different side of writing and recording.
Yeah.
Now, are you writing any songs for anyone else? Do you have any kind of a publishing deal, or are you writing your own and then you maybe pitch them through the connections that you already have?
No, I don't have a publishing deal. I'm self-published, but I did. I do have songs in the mix with Lee Bryce right now and Kelly Pickler, and just contingent on what they decide to do. You know, my publishing deal is with my connections. I don't,
mm-hmm.
I don't have a publisher, and you know, you're always one song away.
Now, mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you something. What is the best story that you've either been a part of or that you heard since you've been in the music business?
The best story.
You can keep it PG-13 ish.
Yeah, right. Absolutely, the best story. I mean, what category do you want to go?
Whatever comes to mind.
Mm-hmm. Funny story, fun story.
Gosh, my brother and I are kind of infamous for this one little story on the Brad Paisley tour.
Perfect.
There was. I remember it really vividly. You know, I was having coffee about 10 a.m. We're going on a golf cart ride with one of the stage managers, and he was an ex police officer. And anyways, he was just going, "Y'all ever been to Detroit?" And me and my brother were like, not really. He goes, "Well, just be ready. Something always happens in Detroit.
Oh,
always." And I just remember him saying that, and I was like, "Oh, cool, awesome. We'll get to see some fireworks tonight. Great. You know, something's going to go crazy, and we're going to get to laugh at it." And then we played our set at like, you know, 5:36, and then we're just done. We're done, you know, we're clocked out. We're playing cornhole. We're having a beer.
and everybody's in the parking lot, and everybody's filing into the amphitheater for Brad's show. We're just out there hanging, and then people start kind of walking out towards the middle part of the show. And anyways, I don't know how this happened, but, man, we had this one guy that he had way too much to drink, and he just thought he was just going to kind of stumble on one of our buses and just check it out. He thought it was his bus. He was like, I'm going to get on there. I'm going to party. And we didn't have any fencing up. It was all wide open. And then next thing you know, I'm playing cornhole, and this guy and my brother start having words. And next thing you know, I'm like looking, you know, across the parking lot, and I hear my brother holler out for me, and just like this kind of like, I'm okay, but I'm actually scared to death.
Oh no!
And then everything just flashes with white. Next thing you know, we're all on the ground, and there's fists and elbows flying, and then we call it this Detroit street brawl.
Oh my gosh!
I'm like, oh man, we're definitely gonna get fired. I'm probably gonna get arrested. I have to call my dad from Detroit. I mean, life's probably over for like a month or two. And then, I mean, I was like, this guy's going to go to the hospital. I'm going to get, you know. Anyways, nobody went to the hospital. Nobody got fired. Nobody got thrown in jail. But everybody was just had the hugest laugh and just like, this is insanity. Where the heck are we, you know?
Yeah.
You're in Detroit, baby. That's,
you were the Detroit story.
I learned a very, very good lesson about Detroit. So.
Oh my gosh.
And I remember like, I'm going to get called in the office, and Brad's going to fire us. He's, you know, we're going to be on the news. And like all these terrible scenarios. And I don't know if none of them happened that I knew of. And so I'm like, great. All right, let's move on. You know,
yeah.
Up your street cred. That's what that does.
I tell you what, nobody messed with me after that. And nobody definitely messed with my brother. So
that's funny.
Well, Kyle, once again, thank you for joining us. And before we let you go, we're going to ask you the most important question that we ask people, and that is, what is true country to you?
Oh, what's true country to me? Oof. Man, that's such a good question.
You're welcome.
Oh. You know, true country is, I'm getting emotional thinking about it. You know, it's getting a chance to stand on that circle and that circle in the Grand Ole Opry means everything to me. The songs that have been sung there, the hymns that have been sung there, the people that have shared their story and their life and their heart there, that is what true country is to me, because people come to that building from all over the country and they are just lit up. And if you could see it from the stage, it's just a magical place. And so everything that happens out on the tours, everything that happens out in Detroit, all comes to fruition in that circle on the Grand Ole Opry stage. And that's what true country is to me. And I'll be forever grateful for being able to stand up there and watch my peers, watch legends, watch heroes entertain. And people forget. They forget about all the stuff that they went through, they're going through. And they're able to just remember the good things and to focus on the good things and to push on for the good things. So that's what it is to me.
And that's true country to Kyle Stallins.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's great.
Well, Kyle, before we let you go, one last thing, the world famous 30-second true country shot clock. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you 6 questions and you have 30 seconds to answer all of them. So are you ready, sir?
Okay. I'm ready. Let's do it.
All right. Let's begin. What is the nickname for your favorite instrument?
Nickname is PD.
What is the instrument you wish you could play?
Violin.
What is the best concert you ever attended?
Chicago.
Whose tour bus would you like to hang out on?
John Daly's.
Wow. You can only listen. That's a first. You can only listen to 3 artists for the rest of your life. Who would they be?
Okay, I'm going to go with Vince Gill, Adele, and Oscar Peterson.
And lastly, what is Toby Keith drinking in his red solo cup?
Golly. Oh, man. I've seen that Red Solo Cup. I didn't have the chance of looking at it. I'm going to say Miller Lite.
All right. There you go. Well, this has been a lot of fun. Tell people where they can find you if they want to look you up and check you out.
They can always find me at KyleStallins.com, Facebook Kyle Stallins, Instagram Kyle Stallins. It's all the same. And then Spotify and iTunes and YouTube. So have them check out the YouTube video Graffiti. And yeah, that's where you can find me.
Okay, fantastic. And if y'all enjoyed today's episode with Kyle Stallins, please continue to rate us, follow us, review us, like our podcast. And you can, of course, find all of this episode and all of our episodes on truecountrypodcast.com.
And on behalf of myself and Teresa, thank you again, Kyle, for your time. We really appreciate it, sir.
Absolutely. You guys are great. Thanks so much. Keep doing what you're doing.
Absolutely, man. Thank you. I am Justin Mason.
And I'm Teresa.
And this is True Country.